We have no idea, once God put man on the earth, how much time passes between day 7 and Genesis 3 and verse 1. Probably not very long. But point being, we have no idea how long peace reigned in the Garden of Eden. This point where God had said, you have access to the tree of life, and this is your world, and I'm going to have this relationship with you. What I can tell you, however, is that the peace and the calm that Adam and Eve had probably taken for granted, like we do when things kind of calm down a little bit in our lives, those things are about to be shattered. And they're going to be shattered with the appearance of the serpent in chapter 3 and verse 1. And by the time this chapter ends, as I said earlier, the reader is able to see the need for God's plan. When the scene opens, we're introduced to the serpent. Oh, you think it's funny too because you're not sure which one the serpent is? If you let it get posted, it's free game. That had been sent to my phone before you ever got the snake off your neck, I promise you. Spoiler alert. So we talk about this serpent. If you do not want to know who the serpent is until later on in the story, you know, kind of like the Star Wars fans, we did not want to know who Kylo Ren was before we saw the movie. So if you don't want to know who the serpent is, stick your fingers in your ears. And you might not want to watch the next couple of slides, because I'm going to tell you, because I've read ahead, I've seen the end of the story, and God's going to identify the serpent. Revelation 12, 9 and 20 and verse 2 kind of puts all of those titles that that serpent wears together. The term serpent refers to the fact that this being is cunning. He's intelligent. He has the ability to sneak up on man, to catch him unaware, draw him into a conversation, mislead him. So who is the serpent? Well, the serpent's the dragon, representing power. And that is Smaug from The Hobbit. The serpent is the devil. And since we have no idea what the devil looks like, I did not choose the little guy with the pitchfork and the little tail and little red horns. I tried to choose something aggressive and scary, because he's the slanderer. He's the accuser. He's the one that stands before God and points his finger at us when we fall. He's the devil. He's Satan. He's the adversary. That's who I want you to see when you read Genesis 3 and verse 1, and it says, the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he approaches Eve. That's the one who's described later on in the book as not only crafty, but a deceiver. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 3. He's described as a liar. He's described as the father of lies. John 8 and verse 44. Same passage, Jesus says that he's been a murderer from the beginning. His first work is designed to kill. Go back to Genesis 2 and verse 17. What did Jesus say, or what did God say in relationship to the knowledge of tree of good and evil? The day you eat it, you will die. That's Satan's plan. He's a murderer from the beginning. He's a wily schemer, Ephesians 6 and verse 11. And he's a roaring lion, 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. None of those are warm and fuzzy. None of those are cute little cartoon characters. They're scary. They're intimidating. They're aggressive. That's who we see. And that's who we see upon first glance being portrayed by God as this suicide bomber walking. And we'll look at this in a minute. He's not slithering. He's not crawling. He's walking up to Eve. And Satan, when he appears in that garden and he addresses Eve, carries a spiritual bomb that is intended to destroy the peace of God's world. It is intended to destroy the pinnacle of God's creation. It's intended to murder. It is intended to shatter the relationship that man has with his Creator. He's going to capture and enslave and separate Adam and Eve from their God. His first words reveal the intelligence, reveal the desire to defame God, the desire to trick and manipulate. His first words call God's character into question. Did God really say, "You shall not eat from any tree of the garden"? Does God not care about you? Does God not think you're hungry? Did God really say that of all the things that are around you, there's nothing you can have? And Eve bites. Eve takes the bait. Rather than staying away from the serpent, rather than cutting him off, she gets drawn into a conversation. She responds, and granted, she tries to fight back. She tries to defend God's honor. But the danger is in the fact that she's now in a conversation with the dragon, with the serpent, with Satan. And as much as she tries to defend God's honor, she's also woefully either misinformed or she just misunderstands. Because her response reveals that either Adam did not do a very good job of relaying God's instructions, or Eve did not do a very good job of learning them. Because what does she say? Well, first of all, she defends God, as I said. That's not what God said. Don't misquote God. He said we could eat from all of these trees. But from the one in the middle of the garden. And then here's where you see that she's either misunderstood, or Adam's not done a very good job of teaching, or she's been drawn into this mindset by Satan. Whatever the case is, she says, quoting God, "You shall not eat from it or touch it, lest you die." Maybe Adam told her not to touch it. Maybe she's just influenced by Satan's charge. And so she's begun to kind of see God as a little overbearing, and so she's added it to his instruction. In one respect, it's not a bad idea. If you're not allowed to eat it, why touch it? It kind of removes some of the temptation. But here's the problem, and here's what's going on, and this is what Satan is playing on. It's what he set up, and it's what Eve has fallen into. It's the trap. When we start adding where God has not added, when we start limiting and tightening where God has not tightened, and speaking for Him, we make Him out to be an ogre. We make Him out to be harsh, overbearing, ridiculous. Satan keys on that. Satan, understand this, and I tried to emphasize it earlier, Satan, who is a lot smarter than we give him credit for being, keys on her willingness to paint God as nitpicky, willing to add to what God has said. And so she's willing, whether it's misinformation, as I said, or misunderstanding, or she's just been drawn into this, she's willing to alter what God has said. And so Satan jumps on that. And he calls God a liar. Because in a sense, Eve's given him permission. You're not going to die. God just told you that. That's not true. There's nothing wrong with this fruit. And then called his character into question earlier. Now he's flat out called him a liar. He has Eve kind of buying into this, let's talk about God. And Satan begins to make God seem petty, make God seem jealous, unfair. God's holding Eve back. She's not allowed to reach her potential. She's not allowed to have something that she deserves. She's not allowed to have something that she will enjoy, something that she wants, something that'll make her better. No, you're not going to die. He just does not want you to be like him. What is it he says? He knows that in the day that you eat of it, that you'll know the difference in good and evil. You'll be wise, like you'll be like God. And he doesn't want you to be like him. He's petty, he's jealous, he's small, and he's afraid of the competition. So he's not going to let you eat, and he's going to tell you you're going to die. He doesn't want you to be like him. And Eve has taken the bait. And there's no doubt in my mind that her desire for that fruit is intensified. And at this point, she begins to rationalize. She begins to think about it. Well, it's good for food. It's not poisonous. It's something different than I've eaten off that tree or that tree or that plant. And so it's a good thing. She continues the rationalization process. It looks good. It's attractive to the eye. God didn't make it this horrendous, scary-looking, poisonous-looking fruit. It's desirous to make one wise. I can be like God. And so Satan keys on the three things that are at the heart of all temptation. And once she has begun to rationalize, the battle's over. Satan has the upper hand. And she succumbs. She gives in to the pressure. And she eats. And it's not enough that she eats, that she defies God, that she sins, she finds Adam and says, here, have a bite. And guys, we're not very good at resisting the temptation of our women. And so there it is, and Adam eats. You see, and here's the thing, Eve was tricked. We made reference to that in 2 Corinthians 11. It's also in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 14. Eve is deceived. She's drawn into a conversation. Words are twisted. She's lied to. And she falls for it. She wasn't there in the beginning. She didn't hear God say, do not eat because you'll die. Adam, however, he's not tricked. Adam's there when God gives the instruction. Adam receives them directly. Adam is not there in this conversation with Satan, so he's not tricked into anything. When Adam walks into it, He walks straight into sin knowing exactly what he is doing. And so it didn't matter that Eve handed it to him. Adam's at fault. There are, if you read Genesis chapter 3, immediate consequences. Verse 7, their innocence, it's gone. Poof. Immediately, they eat, they look around, oh my goodness, we're naked, and they're ashamed of it. So they've gone from that point that your child, when he's 2, 3, whatever, gets out of the shower, and it doesn't matter if you have 50 people in the house, he streaks through the house because he forgot his clothes or he forgot his towel or he just wanted to feel the wind, to that point where if you try to go into the bathroom when your kid's in the shower and you hit the door and it's locked and you run into it face first because they've gone from being free with everything to having it all hidden. That's this. See, we were designed innocent and pure. And all of a sudden, the door's locked because Adam and Eve are shocked by what they've seen. Verses 8, 9, and 10. For the first time in God's world, in man's world, there's fear. They're hiding because they're afraid. They're worried about what God's response is going to be. And they understand that sin has entered their world. Man, where are you? I'm hiding. Because I'm afraid. Why are you afraid? Well, I was naked. Who told you? Why all of a sudden are you thinking about these things? Did you eat of the tree I told you not to eat of? You see, God knows. Because we weren't designed to have to worry about those things. Notice also in those same verses that man's relationship with God is damaged. God is physically manifesting Himself in their world and walking in their garden. The relationship that's designed for us is interaction with God in our world. And yet they've had to hide from God. The relationship's shattered. It's damaged. They're not going to be able to walk and talk with God the way they had before. Verses 11, 12, and 13, the blame game begins and it's never stopped. Adam, why'd you eat? Because the woman that you made for me gave it to me. Eve, why'd you do that? Because the serpent that you made tricked me. They don't deny what they did. It's just always somebody else's fault. Nothing changes. Immediate consequences. There's one missing. I've already referenced it. Do you remember what it was? What's wrong here? No takers? I thought God said something about them dying. Weren't the exact words, on the day you eat of it, you will die? And yet they're still walking and talking. What is it we say? If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it must be a duck. If it's walking and talking and it's animated and it has all the features of life, it must be alive. And so, what's happened? They're going to go not only to being alive now, to being alive when they leave the garden. God's going to talk about long-term consequences. So we have a problem. Someone has to die. Today, on the day that they eat, somebody has to die or else God's a liar. Just like Satan claimed. So how do we make that work? How do we allow Adam and Eve to walk away from here? What did he mean? Back in chapter 2. I want you to consider, there are at least four ways that man died on that first day when he ate. Number one, the process of their physical deaths began for Adam and Eve. When they are removed from the garden, if you read down to the end of the chapter, God's going to post a guard. They're not going to get back in the garden, so they're no longer going to have access to the tree of life. From the moment they eat, they begin to age. They begin to move toward death. The second way man dies is death entered the world. 1 Corinthians 15:21-22, for since by man came death, by man also came the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam, all die. And so now death's part of this world. Romans 5:12, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, death spread to all of us. And so in that sense, mankind died. Death went from being a possibility. If you eat, you will die. That's a possibility contingent upon them eating, to an actuality. You're going to die. Death is now part of your world. Man was, in some sense of the word, supposed to be immortal. We had access to the tree of life. We're not supposed to die. That's not the plan. Now, I don't know that we're going to live in this world if the plan works forever and ever and ever, because we're given the instruction to be fruitful and multiply. Nobody ever dies. We overpopulate the world. So maybe God's going to take man without death, like Enoch, like Elijah. Whatever the case is, death has descended on the world for the first time. The moment that Eve took that bite. So Adam and Eve began to die, and mankind was sentenced to death. Number three, man died spiritually. Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death. You sin, you're separated from God. You sin, you die. You're separated from the source of life. The moment they defied God, they were spiritually separated from Him. But here's the fourth one, and this is huge. This is the part of the plan. The Son of Man died. To understand that, you need to understand this. God does not view time as we view time. God does not see time as this linear thing where you're adding up years towards an end point, where there's this beginning and there's this end, the way we would draw a timeline or the way that we think about it. God sees time from an eternal standpoint. To Him, it's all over with already. He's already been there. And yet, to Him, it's also still happening. He sees it all at once. So as far as God is concerned, the Lamb slain before the foundation of the world, when Eve ate, Jesus died. And the plan becomes a reality. That word in Genesis chapter 2, the day you eat it, you will die, is a very specific word. It refers to immediate physical death, and even at times, violent death. Somebody had to die that moment, and as far as God was concerned, His Son did. That bite killed Him. The last of the immediate consequences is their expulsion from the garden. No more perfection. Pack up your belongings and leave. No more tree of life. It's time to go to work. It's time to sweat. It's time to be in danger of death on a daily basis. The long-term consequences, well, for the serpent, no more walking. God says you're cursed. And you can crawl on your belly. You can slither for the rest of your existence. You can eat dust. He said not only that, physically, there's going to be hatred between man and serpent kind for eternity. Wednesday night, the picture that I showed earlier with Deborah's going around, and you can see people recoil from a picture. That man's not putting that snake anywhere near me. Fear of snakes ranks, depending on which list you look at, either in the top 10 or the top 15 of all fears of mankind. Up there with spiders, and that's mine. Up there with heights and flying and commitment and public speaking. Most people do not function well when that serpent crawls by. Spiritually, there's always going to be enmity between Satan and God. God warns him. He said, you're going to get your blow in. You're going to strike the heel. You're going to take the physical life of my son. But when you take his physical life, he's going to crush you. Your wound is going to be mortal. He's going to destroy you. For Eve, for woman, God said you're going to be your pain's going to be multiplied during childbirth. One of the worst physical experiences a woman can go through, if it's done naturally, that increased pain goes all the way back to that day. He didn't say it's going to be painless in the beginning, but it got worse. He said the second part of it, you're going to be under the authority of your husband. And you're going to chafe under it. There are going to be times that you don't like it and you want to rebel against it. But he's the authority. He's the head. For the man, well, the ground's cursed because of him. And so instead of tending a garden, instead of pruning a few trees here and there and picking the fruit off of it, man now gets to toil. He gets to sweat. He gets ground that's not just producing trees and fruit and vegetables, but it's now producing thorns and thistles and weeds. And he gets to hoe. And he gets to till. Oh, and by the way, you're going to die. You're going to return to the dust from which you came. New Testament connections, Satan's unchanged. Matthew chapter 4, he's a liar, a deceiver, an accuser, a destroyer, and he's bold and he's imaginative. He attacks the Son of God, and he's going to attack us. His tactics, in some senses, they're not changed. 1 John 2 and verse 16, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, same things that got Eve, get us. And he keys on our weaknesses. When he's there with Jesus in the wilderness, what's he keying on? You're hungry, have something to eat. You're supposed to be the Messiah, but I can make you the same thing without the death. I can make people bow down at your feet. The consequences, they're still in place. You sin, you die. Outside of Christ, there's no solution to that. The role of women, the role of women in the church is still based on Satan's deception of Eve, 1 Timothy 2 and verse 14. That'll always be the way we fail. The consequence will never change. Man will always be the spiritual head. Jesus dies because of that first bite. There's your New Testament connection. What you see happen at Calvary happens because of what happened in the Garden of Eden. Here's our application. Sin is still a choice. The tree, in a sense, is still there. It may have different fruit now. It may be something different that tempts you, but we still have the choice of reach for it or not, of obey or not. The second thing, as far as application, the blame game still does not work. Man points it at Eve, and Eve points it at Satan. So what does God do? He said, I'll deal with all three of you. Because you're all three in the wrong. If I sin, I pay the price. No longer does someone else pay it for me. God still loves us. The most beautiful thing about Genesis chapter 3, man has failed and he's failed miserably. In a sense, he's spit in God's face. What you gave me wasn't good enough. I want the one thing you said I couldn't have. And so I took it. And God offers all the consequences. And then he said, I love you so much, I'm going to clothe you, and I'm going to go with you, and I'm going to take care of you. That's beautiful. He's provided for our physical and spiritual needs ever since. He still loves us. Before we get to that conclusion like we always do, here's your heads up, chapter 4 next week. You first look at sacrifice, something very fascinating about it, the danger of uncontrolled anger, and the warning that God gives Cain, tries to cut it off, and then the value of life, what God says about it. But here's our conclusion. Here's the invitation. Oh, let me, interesting note for you. Adam and Eve eat, they look around, they realize, oh my goodness, we're naked. So they make what are called loin coverings. They cover from about here to here. When God walks in the garden and Adam hides, why does Adam say he hides? Because I'm naked. You just got dressed. Adam didn't see himself as dressed. Guess what? Neither did God. When God sends him out of the garden, God dresses him before he leaves. Based on those standards, there's a whole lot of people running around this world naked all the time. And they think they're clothed. And God disagrees. Here's the conclusion, though. Jesus died at Calvary because of what happened in the garden. Without his death, there's no solution to the garden. There's no hope. There's no grace. There's no mercy. And so the plan, the minute we eat, and yes, we blame Adam and Eve, and on the other side, don't blame Adam and Eve, because if we'd have been there, we'd have eaten. That's just the nature of man. But what happened in the garden produces Calvary. But Calvary gives us access to the true tree of life. John 14 and verse 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so we have access to that. And we have access to that eternal tree of life that's in heaven. Mentioned a couple of times in Revelation. We can live forever. Eternal life, 1 John 5 and verse 13. God's plan works. That's the good news. Is that obedience to the gospel removes the eternal consequences of sin. Gives you access to heaven. If you haven't already had your ticket punched, let him punch it today. Let him pay for the ticket in blood, stamp his approval on it, and give you access to the tree of life. Come and obey the gospel. If you're off the path, get back on it, so that your ticket still has value as we stand and sing.